Psalm 128, A Song of Ascents. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in His ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel.
Welcome. What is the key to the blessed life? Maybe it feels like a slightly crass question to ask in the middle of a global pandemic, when simply scraping by is a victory. But in some ways, it just brings the question into even sharper focus, doesn't it? What really matters? Where is true happiness to be found? Where should we be investing our energies and our focus? Our habit in the Gears household since lockdown began has been to have a Friday night family movie night. And a few weeks ago, we watched Night at the Museum 2. We're left on a cliffhanger for most of the film as Theodore Roosevelt asks Ben Spiller's character, Larry, do you want to know what the key to happiness is? And he's frozen in time before he can give us the answer. But by the end of the film, Larry reckons he's worked it out. It's doing what you love with the people you love, isn't it? To which Roosevelt replies, well, I was going to say physical exercise, but the love thing's good too. What is the key to the blessed life? Is it to do what you love with the people you love? I asked my friend Jack, who's a life coach. I thought he'd have a good idea. His life resembles what many people would probably imagine the blessed life to be, surrounded by the beautiful Rocky Mountains in Colorado. His attempt at a one-line answer was about realizing that your path isn't only of your own making. I don't know what you make of his answer. I suspect he would have had a lot more to say on the subject if I'd given him more time. Maybe you stopped listening at the mention of the Rocky Mountains and thought that sounded like the key to the blessed life right there. Our passage today, Psalm 128, gives the Bible's unequivocal answer to that question. And there's no cliffhangers here. Verse 1, blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in His ways. Or again in verse 4, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. So to find out why this is the case, let's unpack that a little bit. So firstly, what does it mean to be blessed? What does it mean to be blessed? To be blessed is to be truly, ultimately happy, no matter what your present circumstances. This is the good life. To be blessed is to know the Lord's favor upon you. And it's a beautiful picture of blessing in this psalm. It starts in verse 2 with blessing in the personal realm. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Through lockdown, my wife Elise and the kids have been trying with varying success to grow all sorts of things in pots or in the garden. Between cats sitting on them or neighboring kids running over them, there they are, mysterious creatures digging them up in the night. It's proved surprisingly hard to get something to actually grow and reach maturity and bear fruit. But in the psalm, the blessed person works to plant something, and then they get the joy of eating the fruits of their labor. It's a picture of work without all of the frustrations of printer jams, with none of those failed projects that you pour your heart and soul into for months, only to find the project cancelled at the last minute and all that work wasted. Then in verse 3, there's a blessing in the family realm too. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. So picture the scene. It's a table packed with people, mum and dad, surrounded by the hustle and bustle of children of all ages, piling food onto their plates. Mum is positively blooming with another on the way shortly. It's a scene bursting with life and joy, filled with blessing. The second half of the psalm follows a similar pattern. So verse 4, behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Only this time it's broadened out from not just the personal and family realm, but to the wider people of God, the successive generations. So verse 5, may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Or verse 6, may you see your children's children. And ending in that final benediction, peace be upon Israel. It's not just a picture of an individual getting stacks of cash from God so that they can spend it on fast cars and private jets. The blessing experienced by the individual is one that flows out to others, to the family, the wider community. Through the summer, as a church, we've been working through this little collection of psalms called the Psalms of Ascents, a kind of hymn book that pilgrims could use on the journey up to Jerusalem. In many ways, there's something of a different tone to this psalm compared with the other psalms of ascent. Many of them have had a real sense of longing or foreboding or danger on the road. Last week, the city needed watchmen, but not so this psalm. Psalm 128 gives us a great picture of arriving home, of eternal rest with God, surrounded by his people, living in safety. We've said many times through this series that the Psalms of Ascent are arranged in sets of three, with the last psalm in each set being the high point. This, in fact, is the central set of three in the collection, which in Hebrew literature is often very significant. So there's a real sense of relief in this psalm. This is the blessed life where I finally arrived without any of the frustration or heartache of the journey. So that's what it means to be blessed. And the key to this blessed life, according to Psalm 128, is to fear the Lord and walk in his ways. But secondly, what does it mean to fear the Lord? I read this psalm with my kids earlier in the week, and that was one of their very first questions. What does it mean to fear the Lord? Does it mean we need to be scared of him? In the Narnia series, the great lion Aslan is something of a picture of the Lord Jesus. And there's a great scene in The Silver Chair where Jill Pole is desperate for a drink, and all that stands between her and the stream is this great big lion. And I'm going to read you a little bit, which I enjoyed very much. Hang on, this is dreadful, I've lost my page. It was there a minute ago. Right, are you not thirsty, said the lion. I'm dying of thirst, said Jill. Then drink, said the lion. Would you mind going away while I do, said Jill. The lion answered this only by a look and a very low growl. And as Jill gazed at its motionless bulk, she realized that she might as well have asked the whole mountain to move aside for her convenience. The delicious rippling noise of the stream was driving her nearly frantic. Will you promise not to do anything to me if I do come, said Jill. I make no promise, said the lion. Jill was so thirsty now that without noticing it, she had come a step nearer. Do you eat girls, she said. I have swallowed up girls and boys, women and men, kings and emperors, cities and realms, said the lion. It didn't say this as if it were boasting, nor as if it were sorry, nor as if it were angry. It just said it. I daren't come and drink, said Jill. Then you will die of thirst, said the lion. To fear God isn't to live in dread of a capricious monster who loves to smite his enemies for a bit of light entertainment. And yet it must contain some element of that respectful awe that recognizes that this is the one who spoke whole galaxies into existence, and that were it not for his goodness, we would be utterly lost. When the prophet Isaiah stood before the blazing purity of God's holiness, he immediately fell to the ground, crying, woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. It's easy for Christians to sometimes get a little too comfortable with the idea of speaking to God in prayer. Easy to become complacent and think that this is a perfectly normal thing to waltz into the presence of the King of Kings and ask for our requests. Just as Isaiah fell on his knees before the Lord, so in the New Testament, the Apostle Peter does the same thing when he first realizes who Jesus is. Elise and I have been watching the brilliant series called The Chosen about the life of Jesus. And there's a scene that captures this brilliantly when Peter first meets Jesus and realizes who he is. He hauls in this miraculous catch of fish, so many fish that his boat is starting to sink, and he has to get help from some partners in the other boat. And in Luke 5, verse 8, we read, "When Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord.'" To fear the Lord is to recognize that he is holy and we are not. There's a gulf between us. And yet, the story of the Bible is one of God reaching across that gulf and inviting us to follow him, inviting us to walk in his ways. We are made in his image, made to reflect his glory and imitate him. However far we may have fallen from that ideal, it is still our ultimate purpose in life to know him and to walk in his ways. And that's why it's the key to the blessed life, according to Psalm 128, to fear the Lord and to walk in his ways. It's not a new idea in the Bible. The book of Psalms opens with Psalm 1, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night." Or in the book of Proverbs, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge," or the beginning of wisdom. In big part, to walk in God's ways, fearing the Lord, is the blessing. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. Psalm 23 says, "If I'm walking of the Lord as my shepherd, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." And yet, under the Old Testament covenant, for the people of Old Testament Israel, there were literal promises of material prosperity and blessing for obedience. In Deuteronomy 28, we read, "If you faithfully obey the voice of the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments that I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, if you obey the voice of the Lord your God." And it goes on to specifically mention the kinds of blessings talked about in this psalm. "Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the field. Blessed shall be the fruit of your womb, and the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your herds, and the young of your flock. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out." There were periods in Israel's history, most notably under King Solomon, where they did follow the Lord and experienced tremendous material prosperity, where the people multiplied in number and lived in safety, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, all the days of Solomon. And yet, if you're anything like me, that's probably just one of a few things about this psalm that at first might make you a little uneasy. Because ultimately, Israel proved unable to walk faithfully in God's ways. Israel and her kings failed to fear the Lord, and their history was one of constantly turning aside to idols, until eventually it was not the blessings of Deuteronomy 28 that they experienced, but the curses for disobedience, leading to their exile from the land. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. So why is it that so often it feels like the blessings described in this chapter are beyond our grasp? It's all very well saying that everyone who fears the Lord will be blessed. But what about when we're struggling with being single, or we're experiencing childlessness or the grief of a miscarriage? Or what about when our dinner table is surrounded by children, but it's not the beautiful picture I described earlier, but one marred by family discord and squabbling? Does that mean the psalm is not true? Or does it mean that I've somehow missed out on God's blessing because I didn't obey him fully enough and failed to fear him? How are we meant to read a psalm like this as Christians, living not under the old covenant of Deuteronomy, but under the new covenant of God's grace through Jesus Christ? Alec Mattia, in his commentary on this passage, very helpfully explains, "Our position is one of faith. If we take the passage as a statement of observation or of experience, it is plainly false. But to do so is to misunderstand the position the psalm is adopting. Psalm 128 calls us to the obedience of faith, to cultivate in our hearts a truer fear of the Lord and to direct our walk by his revealed word. The promises of God are a summons to faith and patience until his moment of fulfillment comes. But come it will, for he who promised is faithful. The psalmist is all too familiar with the trials of this life whilst waiting until that moment of fulfillment comes. Do you remember how these Psalms of Ascent began back in Psalm 120? Sojourning in Meshech, dwelling among the tents of Kedar. Woe is me, it said. Or the first in our group of three, Psalm 126. Do you remember? It was pleading with God to restore the fortunes of Zion. It talked to those who sow in tears, waiting for a time when they shall reap with shouts of joy. Now, there is often weeping and occasions for joy, of course, but we're waiting for a time when they shall come home with shouts of joy. When our psalm says, may you live to see your children's children, I actually think there's lots of grandparents out there who've been very much waiting to see their children's children during lockdown. There's a photo of one longing for a future day when they can hold them again. But they knew that wait they must. It can be so tempting, can't it, to look over our shoulder at what those around us have in the here and now. So when that beautiful rustic farmhouse in Cornwall pops up on Rightmove, it can be so tempting to think, if only I had the right house or lived in the right place, then I would experience the blessed life. If only I had that special someone or my circumstances were different in just that one specific way, then I would truly know God's blessing. But this psalm says, no, it's by fearing the Lord and walking in his ways that I will know his blessing, wherever I live now, whatever my circumstances now. As I walk in God's ways, there's also an encouragement here to take my personal godliness seriously. Central to the psalm is this idea that my personal walk with the Lord will affect others and overflow to others. The individual fearing God has a blessed family life and peace for the whole nation. In other words, if I'm living in the fear of the Lord, that will be a blessing to them. And if I'm not, then that will have negative repercussions. I certainly see that dynamic at work in my own immediate family. When I'm in a bad mood and I lose my temper with my kids, that makes life miserable for everyone. And more often than not, they end up taking it out on somebody else further down the line. But when I'm walking in the fear of the Lord, showing generosity and grace and holding my tongue, then we tend to all get on much better with each other. And just as it is within an individual family, so it is within the church and the wider society. The seriousness with which I pursue godliness in the fear of the Lord has profound consequences for how seriously those around me are going to take it and pursue it for themselves. The psalm calls us to faithfully persevere in fearing the Lord as we wait for God's blessing. And when things aren't going my way, when I'm anxious and I'm afraid, those can be times when it's tempting to turn aside from God and look for comfort and security elsewhere, for things that seemingly offer more short-term blessing in the here and now. But again, this psalm says, no, keep walking in the fear of the Lord. Everyone who fears the Lord will be blessed. We see this played out most clearly in the life of Jesus Christ himself. For who has there ever been who feared the Lord more than Jesus, who walked so unfalteringly in God's ways? And yet in his earthly life, Jesus never saw a single one of the blessings mentioned in this psalm. He died single, childless, outside the walls of a Jerusalem under Roman occupation. And yet who would dare to say that Jesus was not blessed? This side of the resurrection, he reigns from heaven. And he has become the ultimate fulfillment of verse 4, and that man who fears the Lord, experiencing the blessing of God. Perhaps we were too quick to read ourselves into the part of the husband in this psalm, when in fact we are called to be part of the church, the wife of the Lamb. We said, didn't we, that the blessings to the one who fear the Lord in this psalm overflow to others, to his household, to his community. Because of Jesus' perfect obedience, if we trust in him walking in the fear of the Lord, we can sit at his table in the new creation and share in his blessings, part of his amazing family. As Jesus says in John 15, I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. It's his people, the church, that are to be the fruitful vine branches as we abide in his word. So far from being an unrealistic picture of blessings we might never experience, this psalm is a beautiful call to faith that the fear of the Lord really is the way to the truly blessed life. Jesus knew it, and we're called to believe it too. Here is a psalm that calls us to faithfully persevere in waiting for God's final fulfillment. If we keep walking in his ways, fearing him, trusting in Jesus, then one day I really shall sit around his banquet table and look at all the faces of my Christian family and rejoice at last. The Lord bless you from Zion. Peace be upon Israel.